And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Well, methane is a gas you probably heard about. It's also known as natural gas because it comes out of the ground, but that natural gas designation is kind of historical reasons. It technically is chemical as methane. Of course, natural gas, methane, probably comes into the house you live in. It's oftentimes used to cook our meals, heat our homes. It is everywhere in our society right now, especially here in Massachusetts. It's called clean burning because when you specifically burn methane, you produce less CO2 than you do burning other forms of fossil fuels, which all by itself is okay, that's fine. But it turns out that methane by itself, before it's burned, is an incredibly powerful greenhouse gas, much more powerful than carbon dioxide. Well, in about the year 2013 or 2014, that realization that methane, before it's burned, is an incredibly powerful greenhouse gas, that realization had come home to roost because the natural gas is being used throughout the Commonwealth, supplied to homes through pipelines that leak. And those leaks allow the raw methane, which again has a very high greenhouse gas potential, to escape into the air. Well, that's good enough as it goes. But in about the year 2014, the Massachusetts legislature, in its wisdom, decided they wanted to do something about the leaks from those pipelines that are underneath people's streets, all through downtown Boston, all throughout the state of Massachusetts. There's natural gas pipelines that are leaking. So they passed a bill, a program called the Gas System Enhancement Program, which encouraged the utilities to repair those pipes in the hopes of cutting down on the leakage of the methane, of the natural gas from those pipelines. So here we are, 7 years after 2014, we're in the year 2021, in kind of a whole new world. We realize that we really, really, really need to get rid of pollution that causes global warming, like methane leaks. But it turns out that, and we need to do that by the year 2030, certainly by the year 2050, if not by the year 2030, which is only 10 years away. But it turns out that, as we'll find out, this gas system enhancement program is not really reducing the amount of leakage. It's just a program. Recently, a nonprofit here in Massachusetts called Gas Leaks Allies, which is basically a network of 30 different nonprofits in the state that work to reduce leaking gas in our homes, in the communities, and in the industry as a whole, right? In particular, with an idea towards climate justice, Gas Leaks Allies commissioned a report. And that's what we're going to focus on today. A report came out about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the fall of 2021, written by Dr. Dory Seavey, who we'll introduce in a minute. But that report basically said that after 6 years, the Gas System Enhancement Program is effectively kind of an emperor has no clothes situation with this very expensive program that is purported to cost $20 billion over the next 20 years is not really doing anything for us from the climate perspective. Interesting stuff. Impactful report. Gas Leaks Allies held a webinar to discuss the report. Very interesting webinar. And what we're going to do is feature different presentations from that webinar, but I highly urge you to go back to the Gas Leaks Allies website. It's literally gasleaksallies.org. And underneath that, you'll find a link to the Gas System Enhancement Program. And under that is the webinar. I urge you to watch it. It's got all the slides. It's a really good webinar. We'll give you a taste of it here. And in this show, we'll begin with Dr. Dori Seavey herself. She'll be introduced by Mike McCaw. Those are the voices you'll hear. I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear.
Dr. Seavey is an applied research economist based in Boston. She received a PhD in economics from Yale University and holds a Master's of Science in Economics from the London School of Economics and a BA from Stanford University. She is the author of GSEP at the 6-year mark, a review of Massachusetts Gas System Enhancement Plan, the report that was released last week and covered on the front page of the Boston Globe. The link to that paper will be posted in the chat, and the paper can also be found on the Gas Leaks Allies website. Dr. Seavey, welcome.
Michael, thank you for the introduction. I'm delighted to be here and excited to introduce the report and give you all an orientation to it. I encourage you to visit the document itself and see the range of substantive areas it addresses. If you're someone who likes footnotes, you're going to be very happy, I can promise you. So in my time today, this is the Excel version, I want to do three things. First, some impart some must-know information about GSEP. Second, present 10 important findings. And finally, give you my top-level thinking about what needs to happen. So let's start with the next slide. As Michael said, GSEP is a program that was put in place by the legislature in 2014 to replace aging gas distribution infrastructure. It does that by providing for accelerated cost recovery of the utility's capital spending. And the goal of the program has been to enhance safety and to reduce methane leaks. There are six investor-owned companies that participate in the program, and the Department of Public Utilities, DPU, is the public agency that is in charge of regulating the companies and administering the program. DPU is part of the executive branch. So next slide. The first thing I want to get across is how gas companies make their money. They don't really make money by supplying all of us with energy. They make a profit by building or replacing infrastructure like the pipes that run through our streets and carry gas to our homes and businesses. And how they make a profit is illustrated in the graph on this slide. So in the first column there, let's pretend you're an energy company and you have $100 million to invest this year. Now let's assume that your pipes have an economic life of 30 years and that your regulator, the DPU, has allowed you to earn a 10% rate of return on your capital investments. And by the way, that is the rate of return that's allowed in the Commonwealth. Then what the second column shows is that after 30 years, you'll get back the capital you spent today, adjusted for inflation, plus an extra $129 million in profit on the return to your, on your due to your rate of return. So from a consumer perspective, what you have to understand is that for every dollar spent today, the consumer is going to be on the hook for $2 30 years from now. Next slide. So let's take a look at how gas customers pay for GSEP. Essentially, the entire cost of this program is paid for by ratepayers, including the cost of lost gas due to leaks. So here's a gas bill that I got from the Understanding Your Gas Bill part of the NGRID website. And it shows a typical residential consumer bill for the winter of 2019. And the important thing to understand is there are two sets of charges. There's a gas supply charge. You'll see there at $22.37. And then a gas delivery charge that's kind of twice the size of the gas supply charge. So the delivery charge is substantial, and it's in that little red box there that there's a tariff that's administered to recoup the utilities costs for GSEP over time. Next slide. So not all gas companies are created alike, and Engrid Boston is really the linchpin to the GSEP system and the linchpin to the Commonwealth's gas leak and methane problem. So you see in that donut graph that in 2019, Engrid Boston accounted for nearly 60% of the total leak-prone pipe inventory in the state. Another 30% is accounted for by the two Eversource companies. So it's important to remember always when understanding GSEP is that Engrid has an outsized role. Next slide. So I did not sufficiently appreciate this when I began this work, but GSEP is administered and managed in a piecemeal fashion, company by company. There are no program-wide metrics for GSEP. There are no interim target goals. There's only one overview report that DPU provides on GSEP, and I critique this report heavily in my paper. So what I had to rely on was programmatic details and statistics that are buried in literally thousands of pages of gas company filings with DPU. In my opinion, GSEP is concerningly short on both accountability and transparency. Next slide. So we're going to run through some of the key findings. Next slide. So using the evidence that I could find, I find no clear or compelling evidence of reduced leaks, reduced leak rates, or of declining methane emissions for the GSEP program as a whole. In terms of the overall number of leaks, what I would say is we're treading water at best. Through 2019, each year showed up by basically 15,000 to 18,000 leaks that are repaired and eliminated, but an equal amount are essentially are pushed over into the next year. It's a backlog of unrepaired leaks. So the map on this slide is from HEAT, which is an energy nonprofit based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It shows the number of leaks in the Engrid Boston system on the day of January 1st, 2021. And I recommend that website to you at HEAT. You can look up any community or any gas company and learn a lot about leaks and where they are. Next slide. In their 2020 GSEP filings, it was striking to me the extent to which companies reported on how they are beginning to shift their replacement work to the projects that are the most difficult, the most complex, and the most expensive. And these projects tend to be located in urban centers. Environmental justice populations have been disadvantaged by the prior prioritization strategies because they tend to be co-located in these more dense, congested urban areas where people are disproportionately exposed to gas leaks. Next slide. My report details important advancements that have been made in pipe repair and leak monitoring technologies. It is now possible to avoid ripping up the street and doing intensive pipe replacement. And instead, at much lower cost, you can extend the life of a pipe by inserting a new pipe inside the old pipe using sleeving methods or robotic tools. But GSEP is stacked against a strategic and accelerated approach to fixing leaks. Instead, it incentivizes replacing pipe, which delivers a profit margin, whereas there is no such return on pipe repair because it's considered just an operational expense. So the graph there in the lower part of the slide looks just at 1 year, 2020, last year. In that year, the companies participating in GSEP basically spent $500 million to replace pipes, but only $40 million to repair leaks. Now, we could fix all the leaks statewide, the new ones plus the ones that are carried over, for about $124 million. That's assuming a cost per leak repair of $4,000 to $5,000. Next slide. The original timeframe for this program was 20 years, ending in 2034. DPU has granted extensions to several of the companies. And for all intents and purposes, the effective timeframe is now 25 years, ending in 2039. But I conclude that even this extended timeframe is unlikely to be achieved. And that's because it will take Engrid at least until 2043 to replace all of the miles that it has. And that assumes that no additional pipe is added to Engrid Boston's leak-prone inventory. So the elephant in the room with this timeframe issue are the implications for cost recovery. So if we're still replacing pipe in 2043, and if the economic life of that pipe is 60 years, basically what that means is at least my grandchildren are the ones who are going to be paying for it. And just doesn't make a lot of sense. Next slide. What I'm trying to convey here is that the goalpost for this program keeps moving farther and farther down the field. I detail how, so far, under this program, we have replaced 1,348 miles of main. But at the same time, the program has accepted 1,000 additional miles to the inventories of leak-prone pipe of each company. So that's really a problem. And in addition, the Mass Department of Environmental Protection in December found that Engrid Boston may need to reclassify 1,600 miles of leak-prone pipe. And this would, if it happens, increase Engrid's leak-prone inventory by almost 50%. Next slide. So statewide, the average unit cost for replacing 1 mile of pipe is now at about $1.95 million. It ranges from about $800,000 for Liberty Utilities, which operates in the Fall River, Westboro, North Attleboro region, all the way up to $2.6 million for National Grid Boston. Next slide. The costs for the three largest companies have been accelerating at a rapid rate, essentially 16 to 17% since 2014. And what this slide shows is an example, which is the one for National Grid Boston, where you've seen 18% annual increase every year since 2017. You can see the report for an analysis of the factors that companies report are driving up their costs. Next slide. There is no doubt that GSEP has become a mega project, and it is on track to be the largest, most expensive infrastructure project ever in Massachusetts, with total costs that are likely to exceed $20 billion, topping the cost of the Big Dig. Now, for some of you, the photo on this page to the right may bring back memories of the Big Dig, which in hindsight at least brought us the Greenway and the New Tunnel Airport. That mega project clocked in at $27 billion after soaring cost overruns. GSEP, measuring in the same dollars, 2019 dollars, is on par with that scale of costs. And you can see in red my estimate of the range of GSEP costs from $23 billion up to $31 billion. It depends on the depreciation time horizon that you assume and also the assumptions about increases in unit costs. Next slide. So how the heck is all this going to be paid for? What's the plan? We need answers to those questions. And broad brush, here are the elements that are making up the picture. First, the gas customer base is shrinking. Or it will be shrinking as electricity becomes cheaper than gas. We're just at about that tipping point. Lower volumes of gas will be demanded, and all things equal, gas company revenue will decline unless gas rates go up and pipe replacement continues. So utilities are going to petition for two things. First, shorter asset lives for their pipes, and second, higher returns to equity, with the argument that they need to recover their costs more quickly and need to attract investors in a risky environment. And we already see concrete evidence of these two types of petitions in the recent rate case for National Grid Boston. So these sorts of changes will drive up GSEP payback costs and increase gas rates for consumers. In my opinion, all of this should be definitively modeled by the executive branch and perhaps the state auditor. But my assessment is that gas companies will be facing the prospect of substantial stranded costs. Worst case, state bailouts using taxpayer money will be required. Now, for ratepayers, the consequences are likely to be inequitable rate burdens for low-income households, because it's those households who will be left holding the money bag, as households who can't afford to leave the gas system will do so, and in order to take advantage of cleaner, lower cost energy sources. Next slide. GSEP is not aligned with the state's climate goals. GSEP does have an overall goal of reducing methane emissions, but in my view, it is not explicitly or rigorously or successfully tied to any of the Commonwealth's mandated climate goals. DPU and the gas companies claim that methane emissions are declining, but there isn't any credible evidence of that. And GSEP's concerning lack of alignment with the state's climate goals is, in my view, only deepened by recent answers provided by gas companies to two climate questions posed by the Attorney General during the 2020 GSEP proceedings. Essentially, the companies were asked whether they are considering the introduction of hydrogen into their gas systems. Five of the six investor companies stated that they considered their GSEP pipe to be hydrogen ready. So this raises the concern that for gas companies, GSEP may not be so much about shoring up the existing fossil gas system, but instead using GSEP to get the gas system ready for hydrogen blending, a strategy that would likely be at odds with the state's climate mandates, since for the foreseeable future, hydrogen will depend almost entirely on natural gas for its manufacture. Next slide. So what I want to leave you with is this thought. I spent 9 months investigating this program. It was a research adventure that involved more time than I care to think about in the dark recesses of the online DPU file room. And I'm struck by how GSEP did make broad sense back in 2014, as Michael McCord said in his opening remarks. But here we are 7 years later, and the world has changed. We're living in a time of severe climate emergency, so that even if GSEP were perfectly run and managed, the fundamental presupposition of that program, namely that the gas distribution system would be good for another 60 years, doesn't make sense anymore. In fact, it's invalid. So the incentives of this program, in my view, are aligned with something that we don't want anymore. The good news is that leaves us with an opportunity to redirect the powerful GSEP financing mechanism away from shoring up the gas system and instead toward investments in clean, renewable energy.
So there you go. That is an introduction to the report on the Gas System Enhancement Program. I'll remind you, you can get the report and see the entire webinar at the website gasleaksallies.org, all one word. I hope you get a chance to see that. Anyway, we'll put up links to all this stuff as well at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. That's where the show notes are held. If you have questions about the show, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know the things we ought to be covering. Of course, you're listening to us on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the other modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app. Of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, etc., etc. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investments, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities in order to safeguard our collective future. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.